All right, good morning, everyone. Good morning. Our meeting is about to begin. Thank you. Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous 52nd birthday party. My name is Linda. I'm a compulsive over and under eater and your moderator for today's panel. Hi, everyone. Let's begin with our serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right, I'd like to begin by asking if there are any newcomers or members in the first 30 days. If so, please stand and introduce yourself so we can welcome you. All right. As the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 77 from Into Action states, our real purpose is to be fit, is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. According to OA World Service, service is described as carrying the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers is the basic purpose of our fellowship. Therefore, it is the most fundamental form of service. Any form of service, no matter how small, that helps reach a fellow sufferer adds to the quality of our own recovery. Members who are new to OA can give service by getting to meetings, putting away chairs, putting out literature, talking to newcomers, and doing whatever needs to be done for the group. Members who meet the abstinence requirements can give service beyond the group level in such activities as intergroup representative, committee chair, region representative, or conference delegate. There are many ways to give back what we so generously have been given. We're encouraged to do what we can when we can. A life of sane and happy usefulness is what we are promised as a result of working the 12 steps. Service helps to fulfill that promise. As OA's responsibility pledge states, always to extend the hand and heart of OA to all who share my compulsion. For this, I am responsible. All right, thank you. We're honored to have these four long-term members of OA who are willing to share their experience, strength, and hope with us this morning. Each person will speak for 20 minutes, then we'll have time for questions and answers. There's an Ask It basket going around the room, so please feel free to jot down your questions, and they'll be addressed by the panel members during the Q&A following their shares. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to our long-timers. Bill?
Good morning. My name is Bill, and I am a compulsive overeater. And I am from San Diego. To qualify, I first came to the fellowship in 1977. I walked in the door abstaining, as it were, and although there were definitely issues that came up around all of that, and I'm still abstaining today. It's been 34 years, and it's only a little bit me, as I figured out as we go along. We're gonna look at sound here a second, so I'm being distracted a little bit. Are we okay? All right, thank you. Not a problem. All right, I came in the door because I was sick, and I was sick to be able to. Are you hearing me? No. Okay. All right. I'm hearing myself okay. I'm getting a little feedback from the speakers, but let's try it. Let's wait. See. Test. 1, 2, 3. Are we okay? Can you hear me now? No. Not hearing me. So let's get the speakers adjusted. There we go. Okay. There we go. Thank you very much. All right, good. Okay. So, I walked in the door because I was sick. And I'd been having dizzy spells for about a year when I came into the program. I spent about a year going to doctors trying to figure out what the dizzy spells were. Eventually, I ended up at an ear, nose, and throat specialist. Who did some extensive tests and said, well, you don't have anything organically wrong with your hearing. They thought it was an inner ear problem. And he said, but you know, you might be diabetic. So he sent me back to an internist who did a glucose tolerance test, which showed that I wasn't diabetic, but that I was pre-diabetic. I was immediately under. And so the doctor said, well, you know, you got to make some life changes here in order to avoid becoming diabetic. And I have diabetes, adult onset diabetes on both sides of my family, so I'm definitely at risk for that. And he said, well, you need to eliminate sugar for one thing, and eat a healthy food plan. And he handed me a food plan, a drug company food plan that was basically a balanced diet for three meals a day. And you need to take some stress out of your life. So he gave me a prescription for Valium. And this was 1977. You've got to remember that. And I had struggled with weight a lot as a child. And so I had lost and gained pounds a number of times. And so I was used to this. I knew that I couldn't do this alone. I could follow the food plan. At least for a while, I knew I could do that, but I knew that I couldn't figure out how to do it alone. And I was looking for help. I really didn't want to go to a diet club. I was living in a small town in Ohio, and there wasn't a lot of help out there. Because I already had my food plan, I had the diet that the doctor gave me, and it was working. You know, it was doing okay. So, I saw a notice in the paper about a month after I'd seen the doctor that a group of Overeaters Anonymous was starting in town. Didn't know really anything about Overeaters Anonymous, but I had read Dear Abby, who had said Overeaters Anonymous was good, and that it was based on Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, well, Alcoholics Anonymous works, so and it's anonymous, you know. I was really kind of ashamed that I had this problem and that I needed help for my problem. So I ended up calling the number in the paper to ask about the first meeting, and I ended up knowing the person who was starting the meeting. And so there went my anonymity right from the beginning. But I still like the idea of it. I like the idea that I could just be Bill, a compulsive overeater. I didn't like the idea of being a compulsive overeater, actually. I wanted to be Bill, who needs some help with working on this medical issue that he's got. I didn't know anything about any spiritual dimension to the program. I didn't know anything about any psychological dimension. All I knew about was I needed help with following a food plan. And I thought a support group would be good for that. So I went to my first meeting, which was in August of 1977. And the woman who had started the meeting was an alcoholism counselor. And she had a food problem and had been going to AA to deal with her food problem and realized that she wasn't hearing enough of what she needed to hear. So she wrote to OA World Service, got a literature packet, and started the meeting. And that was what we had. We had a whole bunch of people who really didn't know anything. We had this woman who was an alcoholism counselor who knew something, but she didn't really have a grasp of the program, and she was working it herself. And we had a little bit of help. She invited a long-timer from AA to come and speak at our first meeting. Now, this man spoke for about an hour and a half. I have never been to a meeting where anybody has spoken for an hour and a half, to be honest, except for a retreat, you know. He spoke for an hour and a half, and he told his story, and I didn't identify with him at all. He had lived on the streets of Detroit. He had been homeless any number of times. I grew up in a middle-class, upper-middle-class household. We'd never really wanted. There have been times in the family when money was tight, but nothing, you know, nothing serious. And I didn't have any of those dramatic kinds of things that had gone on in my life. But he did talk about one thing, and he spent most of the time talking about it. And that was that there were these 12 steps. And that's how AA people were able to recover and keep their recovery, was the 12 steps. And that I did glom onto because I was looking for something beyond following the food plan. I'd been successful at following food plans before, but I'd always fallen off of them. So I was looking for something beyond that. And here were these 12 steps that yes, we could do this. I could work on these 12 steps. And I kind of thought, well, I'll do it, and then I'll be able to move on. You know, maybe it'll take me a year to do it, and then I'll move on. You know, so I'm here. I am doing it on my own, and not succeeding at all. I'd get down to the inventory, I'd start writing, and I'd give up. Nothing would happen. I really couldn't get anything done. It actually took moving away from this little town in Ohio. OA worked there. Interestingly enough, we had a second meeting start and then a third meeting. People were losing weight. People were being happy. Although we had endless debates about what abstinent was. Of course, OA program at that time in 1977 was also having endless debates about what abstinent was. So we weren't anything special. And I moved off to Minneapolis, St. Paul after a year in the program, and I went out to a regional convention there. I was almost as soon as I got there because I thought, I've been unsuccessful in writing my inventory. Maybe what I need is some kind of format because I've just been sitting down and trying to write, and that's not working. So I went to a panel, and the panel was called It's My Program, and the people who were on the panel were sharing about their programs. And this is really a little bit emotional for me because I've got somebody in the room who was on that panel, and she's sitting in the back, and and she kept sharing, and this was 1978, so she kept sharing about how when she had a problem, she would turn it over. And she turned over this, and she turned over that, and she turned over the other thing. And I had no idea what she was talking about. Remember, I'd been in the program a year, but we'd all been working with each other in the literature, and we didn't know I didn't know any of the lingo. I mean, so I went up there afterwards, and I said to her, you know, I really loved what you had to say, but what's this turn it over? And she looked at me kind of strangely and said, well, turn it over means that you give something to God that's bothering you. You're working the third step. I said, really? I thought I had already worked the third step. And that caused me to go back and look and see what had been going on in my head. And, you know, very fortunately, I asked this person, where do you go to meetings? And she told me, and I started going to the meeting where she went regularly. And I was too shy to ask her to be my sponsor, but I did find a connection with her, and we chatted, and I'll come back to that later because she's sitting in the room, and I really love the fact that this happened. This is a God shot as far as I'm concerned, because I haven't seen her in years, and she's here today. So I started looking at my program, and I realized that I hadn't. I thought I'd worked the first three steps, you know, and I realized that I hadn't. I looked at the first step. I said, "Are you powerless over food?" Well, I'm powerless over the things that I'm that have made me sick. I can follow my food plan. Am I really powerless over food? Yeah, I'm powerless over the sugar that gave me the dizzy spells. Has my life become unmanageable? No. That was the big issue. I wanted to keep control of my life. You know, I just wanted something to help me with following the food plan. Then I looked at the second step and I said, I had read that step as, do you believe in God? And I said, yeah, I believe in God. I actually haven't been to church in a while and I don't have a real spiritual practice, but yeah, I believe in God, and I don't think I've ever given that up. And I didn't realize that it was, do I believe that there's a power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity? Well, I hadn't even admitted I was insane. You know, I thought, I'm fine. I'm perfectly sane, except I need to stay on this food plan. Because in order to do that, I won't become diabetic. And so I had to rethink that. Oh, okay. I had to, in the context of the program, come to a belief in a power greater than myself, not just a general belief in God, but something that I could do for myself. And then the third step was turning my will and my life over to that power. And I had thought, well, you know, when I was a kid, I went to church camp and there was an altar call at church camp and I went down. And so I guess that's what I did. I turned my will and my life over. Well, you know, no, that's not the way the program is. It's the program is that I figured out eventually that I had to do that in the context of the program. And you know what? I did that. A couple of months after that first meeting in Minneapolis, I was walking along on a cold November day. I was very lonely. I didn't know people. I was going off to the movies. I was thinking about my life and thinking about all this stuff. And I suddenly said, "Okay, God, I can't do this anymore. You help me, please." And I wish I could tell you that, you know, the sun came out and the birds started chirping and, you know, it didn't happen that way. But what happened was that something that I was powerless over came up. I'm powerless over my car and keeping my car repaired. And I took my car in for repair and they made it worse than it was before. And I was so upset and depressed about it that I drove it home in the first snow with one windshield wiper not working because they broke it. And went to bed without eating dinner. Now, you know, when a compulsive overeater goes to bed without eating dinner, that is a big deal. So I got up the next morning and I went to a meeting and I shared about it. And the people at the meeting came up to me afterwards and said, "You shouldn't be alone today. Come with us." There were about four or five of them. They were going out to do stuff. I stayed with them the whole day. Some of them were really crazy. Do you know that? They were really crazy. But it was what I needed. And I had picked up an inventory at that regional conference, Minneapolis's Hazelden and more Hazelden, and they had an inventory. And I went home and the day after that, I wrote out my whole inventory. I sat down and just wrote. And then thought, well, I'm not done yet. So I'll put it away. And yeah, I wasn't done, but I put it away for about 3 months and realized it was bothering me. The stuff in there that I'd written down was bothering me, and I needed to do something about it. So I went and I found a priest who heard Fifth Steps anonymously, and still very anonymous. Didn't really want anybody to know any of this. And so I ended up giving the inventory away. We got to the part about resentments. I had not written anything down for resentments because, you know, I grew up in this very average home and really was feeling like I was not terribly resentful of anybody, and the priest stopped me and said, "Well, aren't you resentful toward your parents at least a little bit?" And I started to cry, and I knew that it wasn't as thorough as I had wanted it to be, and actually it took years before it was thorough. You know, it really did. I had to go back, but it was the best I could do at the time. And it indeed helped me to stabilize in my program. Soon after that, I was able to resign from a job that I had without another job on the faith that I would find another job, and I did. I found a job out here in California and was able to move here, and this would have been exactly what I wanted to do. And I was able to throw away the Valium and never have to go back to it again or anything like that, you know. And my friend Gene, who was there in the Twin Cities, ended up moving around the country. And I called Gene my spiritual connection. Every time something spiritually was supposed to be happening in my life, Gene would show up. You know, so I haven't seen Jean in years, and here she is today. She showed up today. So there's something spiritually going on here today, which is really, really good. Jean showed up one time dressed in full leathers. She's sitting back there laughing at me. But it was always something. I would always learn stuff from Jean that I needed to learn. And so I guess there's something I need to learn today. Eventually, I realized that in part of, in writing inventories that I had more problems I had than just food. I had a problem with my sexuality. I had a problem with too much pornography use. I ended up going off to a program for that. I've been sober in that program for 22 years now. And I had a problem with sexual anorexia. I had a problem with being scared of sex. And I like to say that in OA meetings because I find that there are a lot of people who identify with that. That's a problem with many people. And, you know, there isn't any such thing as abstaining from sexual anorexia. So we have, you know, my program is essentially my plan of action, and we're supposed to talk about plans of action and service. My plans of action is that I abstain from my binge foods, and I still am not type 2 diabetic. My measurements still come in under, barely under. You know, I'm not. There are times it inches up into being pre-diabetic and then goes back down again. I have to watch that. But, you know, I abstain from my binge foods. And I try to have a healthy plan of action in terms of eating, try to eat healthy on a daily basis. And that's what happens with my sexuality, too. I abstain from the things that are harmful to me, and then I have try to have a healthy plan of action. It's very slow in that program. You know, once I had patterns established, I was in great denial about my sexuality. I'm gay and had no, didn't want to admit that. It took me till I came into this program when I was 30. It took me till I was 43 to do that. I've abstained through this program through heart disease. My father had heart disease at 43. I had bypass surgery at 50. I'm 65 now. I'm doing fine. I exercise 5 days a week, at least 30 minutes, usually more like 45 to an hour, walking. My doc says I'm in great, I'm doing very well in terms of all those kinds of things. And I'm at peace, you know? And what it is, what gets me at peace is because I have a power greater than myself in my life. I know that power greater than myself, and I went through all kinds of hell about what my higher power was. I went and I thought my higher power was my father, and my father is very disapproving. And I thought my higher power would be that too. What I realized is my higher power is looking for good opportunities. He's looking to put people like Gene into my life. But I have to be ready for it. And the way I'm ready for it is to be of service, to show up, to listen, to help. And when I do that, all is well. And all is well today. And I hope it is with you, too. Thank you for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Sandy. Hi, my name is Sandy. And I'm from the valley here in San Fernando Valley. And I finally made it to the Longtimers panel. I turned 25 in December. You know, 25 years of abstinence, who knew? I'm just going to qualify a little bit and then get into the service. I came in this program like everybody else. I hated myself. I hated who I was, what I had become, and just couldn't even look at myself in the mirror. I was eating 24 hours a day, and I mean 24 hours a day. And I had been on every diet. I had did everything, and nothing seemed to work. Pills, shots. Even one time I got too low, and somebody said to me, "You need to gain weight." Well, that was the stupidest thing they could say to me, because I listened to them, and I gained weight. To qualify, I came in this program weighing 165. And I now weigh about 130. And it was just, I just hated myself. And I had been in an Al-Anon for a while and then got out. And years later, I saw a friend of mine at a party and she'd lost all this weight. And I said, wow, you look great. And I said, what'd you do? She goes, I go to OA. So I kind of thought about it. And I went home one night. I was all by myself. And I just thought, you know what? I can't do this anymore. And I had thought about killing myself. And instead, you know how they talk about miracles? All I heard in my head was OA. I went to the phone, picked up the phone, called to find out where the meeting was. There was a candlelight meeting on Friday night in the valley. I went there, sat in the room in the back, and started bawling my eyes out because all I could hear was people telling my story. Everything they said was what I was feeling. So I felt like, you know what? I'm not crazy. I'm not insane. And I became abstinent that night. That night I became abstinent. And I can't say, you know, my abstinence has been perfect. My food plan, no. You know, because if I was perfect, let me tell you, I'd be 119 and modeling, you know. But that's not going to happen. And even with my food plan, you know, I never told, you know, you call in your food. I still call in my food today. Even 25 years later, I still call in my food. But before that, I would sit there and call and say, I'm having a potato. Never told them it was the size of a football. You know, and I love what this one woman said. She had two pieces of chicken. She cut a whole chicken in half. You know, there's these things that we do. You know, we can cover up anything. You know, nobody knows us better than we. You know, come on. And so I did my food plan. To this day, I'm still very active. I've always been active in sports. I played softball till I was 47, injured my arm. And even to the day, I do boot camp, I work out, and I have muscles at age 64. So, you know, I may be short, but I am mighty. But all through this, I did, you know, the steps, and I went through the traditions, and I worked the program like I was supposed to until I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at the age of 47. Which they say is very, very rare. And when the doctor told me everything that could happen to me, I jumped on the bandwagon even more and followed exactly what they said. And my food plan does not change. I bring my food almost everywhere I go if there's nothing for me to eat. When I went to New Zealand, to Rome, I brought my food. And all the restaurants we ate at knew I was diabetic and had food for me. I never gained weight. Even when I go out with friends, we'll go to a restaurant where I can eat, and if I can't, I'll bring what I need. I do not go off my food plan. Abstinence is the most important thing to me. So as I was working in the program and doing the traditions, you know, I always heard about service. Always heard about service. And I would sit there, I started to be a timer. You know, service is its own reward. So I got to be a timer, which kept me coming back to my meeting. Because, you know, if you take a commitment, you follow that commitment, and it's part of my program. And I would come to every single meeting and do the time. Then from timer I went, okay, I'll be secretary. So I was secretary of the Monday night meeting, and at that time it was a big circle, and it was so much fun being secretary. We started this new clapping routine and all kinds of stuff, and if I made mistakes, I heard about it, people would laugh. You know, it was very relaxed, and I felt like I was giving service. Plus, you know what, I was really working my program. I was really working my steps, my tools, doing what I'm supposed to do. Because to give service, you need to be abstinent. You need to be available. You need to have a clear mind. So here I was being secretary. Loved it. Then from secretary, I decided to move up the ladder. And I became a delegate. And I went I went once a month to the delegates meeting, did the delegates report, sat there, sometimes got bored. But I did it. You know, come back to the meeting, report. And that went on for a while, and then I just didn't like being there. So I moved even higher. I became the intergroup chairperson for San Fernando Valley, which meant I put on all the events. And I loved that. I loved that. I did a Unity Day at Balboa Park. We had a ton of people come out. I had an activity going every other month during the time. I did that for 2 years. And every other month, there was an activity that people came to. And if you don't, that is like the greatest service I thought I could give. Being active, giving, because that's a lot of giving. But getting back from the people who came and who helped. You know, I had other people. I brought in my sponsees to help. So they were really working the program. I gathered as many people as I could to come and give service, to help them stay on the program. And it was great. I made new friends. I had a blast. Well, after that, I decided, okay, what am I going to do next? So I became the fifth tradition person. I'm a printer. So, of course, to do the fifth tradition, it was kind of easy for me. I had some people helping me with that. And all this time, I'm getting better in the program. All this time, I'm working the steps. I'm doing the traditions. I'm talking more. I was talking so much, people didn't want to hear me in meetings. Here I am doing all this service. And I realized this is where I need to be. This is who I am. I'm very outgoing. I like to be out there. I want you to know who I am. And I want to know who you are. You know, I'm here to help you, and you're here to help me. You know, they say OA is a family. Well, I have a huge family. And I love my family. So being out there and giving service was great. I brought everybody in, and, you know, for tradition, I had people reading, making sure everything was right. I printed it, got it to the meetings, you know, that kind of thing. And I did that for a couple of years. So here I am, still being absent, still doing my thing, still watching my blood sugar, making sure, you know, that I'm okay, because I'm on a pump 24 hours a day, you know, and I have to be careful, you know, what I eat and what I do. And this program has just saved my ass. Sorry. And I then ran for chairperson of the San Fernando Valley. And I got it. And I was shocked I got it. And then I went, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And you know what? What a great experience. I had a hard time, but I had a great experience. It taught me how to sit back, how to listen, how to keep my mouth shut, which sometimes is very hard. Because the chairperson really just moderates the meetings. And I had a good crew with me. I had a good group of people, and they took care of everything, and they did their job. They did their job. So I did that for 2 years, and nominations came up again, and I was nominated again and did it for another 2 years. Now, I could not be doing these things if I wasn't in program, if I wasn't abstinent, if I wasn't following the traditions, the tools, if I was not talking to my sponsor, if I was not doing the things I need to do. I've got to be honest with you, I'm not a big writer. I have a very hard time writing, very hard time. One is that my hand shakes when I write and I get very frustrated, and another is my mind. I'm very hyper. And I have a hard time concentrating on one thing. Give me 20 things to do at once, and I can do that. Give me one thing to do, and I can't. You know, maybe I should get on another addiction that would help me. No, I'm kidding. So, but, you know, this is how I function. I do what I need to do to work this program. It's my program. It's not yours. It's not anybody else's. It's mine. And it must be working. because I'm still absent. So here I was and did another 2 years of doing the chairperson. And again, we had a great group. We put on, I'm the chairperson of the dance that the Valley puts on every year. And that dance is just, we've had a blast at that dance. We put on four dances so far. And the turnout has been great. People have enjoyed it. We've had entertainment. We've had just dancing. We've done everything at this dance. And it's going to continue to go on, you know. So after that, I decided I wasn't going to take any more commitments because I had done for like 8 years of commitments, 9 years, 10 years. And it was time that I got back to my program and my family life because it takes a lot of time. So I decided to sit back. And no sooner did I sit back than I got asked to help on the Region 2 birthday party. Of course, I couldn't say no. Did that. Went to all the meetings. I ended up printing all the signs and anything they needed printing. And that took quite a while to do. But you know what? It felt good. In my heart, it felt good. You know, OA gave me a lot. My HP was there with me all the time. My higher power guided me to what I was going to do next. I never just said, okay. It was like, okay, HP, you want me to do this? You know, I would pray. Every morning I pray and say the Serenity Prayer, and I look up at the sun, and that's my God. And when it rains, I'm very upset. I'm going, God, come out, quick, come out. I need sun. But no, you know. But it's, I say thank you. I give gratitude for everything that I have in my life. I don't see any negative because I don't want to start my day off as negative. My phrase, everybody knows me, is whatever. That is my phrase all day long, whatever. So when these opportunities come up, it's whatever. So of course I did this, did all the signs, helped at the banquet, did whatever I could. Then I said, okay, now I'm going to rest again. And I got approached this time here to do Region 2 again, to give service again. And I said yes. And without service, I don't think I'd be as connected with everybody. It is such a grateful feeling to be up here, to be asked to speak. You know, I turned a long-timer. Oh, my God. You know, all these years I've been listening to all the other long-timers. Little did I know I'd be speaking as soon as I turned to be a long-timer. You know, instantly. Hi, can you speak? You know, and it's a great feeling to do whatever I can to give back to this program. You know, action. You know, service and action to me kind of go together. Because when you do action, you're also giving service. There's somebody in this room who I met at the meeting a year ago. And we talked. We have talked for a year now. Every day. She's given service to me. I'm giving service to her. We've done action back and forth. What a miracle. And she's from out of state. What a miracle. You know, who knew? Giving service to me is anything, is when I get an outreach call and somebody's in trouble. I pick up the phone, I talk to them. Thank God I work by myself in an office. There's nobody ever around me all day long. So I can do that. And I love when I get outreach calls. I'm available 24 hours. No, I got a lie. I take a lie. That's a lie. When I work out, I'm not available. I don't let anything interrupt my workout. After my workout, yeah, you can call me. But I'm there. I'm available any time to give service. You know? If somebody needs to meet, I'm there. My sponsees, I give service. I meet with them all the time. We read. We talk about things. You know, that's my way of giving back, my way of telling someone about how I work my program and how the big book and how the meetings and how listening to speakers have helped me. You all give service. Every single one of us in here gives service. We just don't come in here and sit down and go, I'm absent. Hallelujah. We all get up and talk. We all share at meetings. We all let people know how we feel, what we need. That's giving service. That's letting us know, wow, I feel the same way. What can you do for me? Or how can you help me? How many of you in here feel you give service all the time? Raise your hand. You know, we have to look at that. Sometimes we never look at that part of service. We always look at our abstinence. Oh, God. We always look at, you know, how many years we have in the program, how many days. But it's also, you know, every single tool is important. Without the tools, how could we make it in the program? You know, being abstinent. You know, service, action, all the others. Sponsorship. That's all giving service. And I am so glad that I have a life today that I thought I would never have. Never. I had a terrible life all the way up until I came into this program. I'm in a relationship now for almost 27 years I never thought I would be in. I am also gay. And I never thought I would be able to settle down with someone. And this person just came into my life. God put this person in my life. Who used to be a nun? Do you think God was telling me something? A good Jew and a good nun. Hey, what a combination. You know, I mean, it's just amazing how this program works. And it is great. I have learned so much. And not only that, but my partner also teaches theology. So when I need things, she's a lot of times my spiritual guide, because she can sit down and talk to me about God and everything else. So what I'd like to say to all of you is, you're in the program, you're abstinent, but you also, it'd be great at giving service. When they say, please raise your hand if you will be the timer, like the San Fernando Valley group is looking for someone to be literature chair. If anybody's available, they really need someone. So please talk to me or Carol. They'll be out there. There'll be people there. But raise your hand. Timer's nothing. You just go click, click. Now, what's so hard about that? It's hard because some of these timers are very hard. So, you know, but you know what? Give service. Be there for people. Be there for yourself. Pat yourself on the back and go, wow, you know, this is wonderful. I'm doing good in this program. I'm abstinent. So all I can say is thank you very much. Colleen, thank you for asking me. And to everybody here, have a great day.
Hi, everybody. I am so imperfect. I'm Shelley, and I am a compulsive overeater.
Maybe I'll do that.
So, thank you, Bill and Sandy. Thank you, Colleen, for asking me to share. I did not know what a long-timer was. I whispered to Sandy at the beginning, what is the definition of a long-timer? She said 25 years. I didn't even know that. So I am podium right off the stage. I am going to tell you that I came into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous in 1978, and my abstinence date is October 1st, 1980. So I guess I'm a long timer. I know that if I'm capable of getting out of my own way this morning, that there might be a heart I can touch. And I know when I came to program in my first meeting, that is what happened to me. My heart was touched. And I really believe that everything else I've heard, seen, done, experienced, that is what keeps me coming back. My heart continues to be touched. Yes. My heart continues to be touched by this fellowship, by your sharing, by the honesty, by the struggles. And when I came to my first meeting, I was 23 years old. It was the Darby office in the San Fernando Valley, and people were talking from their heart. And I can remember, you know, in my earlier days, wanting a place where people did that, where people just, you know, at the time, rapped, you know, where they just kind of shared their thoughts, their feelings. And here I was in this room. And why did I walk into that room that morning? I walked into that room because I had learned that I had an emotional problem. And as a result of my emotional problem, I was using food and had used food from the time I was very, very young, really young little girl. And there were messengers along the way. I was in a sociology class where the sociology professor, we were at the chapter now of 12-step programs, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was taking notes, and I was noting the steps. They were on the board, he was writing them, and I remember he deliberately walked around the room and came up to me and said, you don't need to note this. And I kept writing. I didn't really know why. And then later, Dr. Tony Grant, back in the day, was talking a lot on the radio and a lot about Overeaters Anonymous, and I heard that. And so it was a day that I had a pizza box underneath my bed. That was part of the crazy behavior. I had a roommate. And the trash wasn't that far away. But I finished the pizza. I put the empty box under my bed. I'd been doing stuff like this from the time I was a little girl. You know, I steal food from the family. I'd steal food from, what did they call them in, you know, the cloakroom when you were little. I stole food out of refrigerators with other employees. It was not normal. So I came into the rooms and I saw the steps and they were framed. Actually, I don't know if they were framed at the time. It was a funky little room. And I saw the steps, and it said, God. I saw the word God. And for me, I did not have a problem with that. In fact, and I've said this many times, it was like hearing the name of a long-lost friend. Because I grew up in a house where I felt really frightened as a child. And I would pray. I would talk to something. I would even write. And I would have experiences of a presence that wasn't taught to me by my family, wasn't taught to me out of a book. It came directly out of my own inner experience. So when I was in this room and hearing about God and reading the word God in steps, I was fascinated by that. So I continued to come back. That's what I did. And since I came in 1978 and my abstinence date is 1980, it took me a while to understand what abstinence was, what it was going to look like for me. And that's been and continues to be an ongoing discovery. This is what I know. I know that I have a disease, and I know that because when I don't take the prescription that is prescribed, I feel sick. And the prescription for me is very simple. It's the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the tools. But I know this. and I don't know much. I know that when I am willing to get quiet, that there's something for me to receive. I have never, ever created anything. I've never created a spiritual experience. I've never created an opportunity for service. I've simply been willing. And then the situations show up, and I'm connected enough to recognize it. Abstinence allows me to have clarity to recognize, to perceive. You know, I was sitting here on the panel listening, enjoying, looking out at all of you, and it was so fascinating to me because are you really the audience? Are we really the speakers? And I'm noticing the timer. You know, when Sandy was just, I noticed this red sign go up, go time's up. You know, at some point, our time is going to be up. Time's up. We're all going to get a time's up. What am I doing with my time? What could be more valuable to me? And this is the truth for me. Whatever service is, and there's lots of language for it in our program, trusted servant, whatever that is, it's a feeling I recognize. There's a symmetry, there's a synchronicity to the feeling of what service is. So it's not about the action I'm taking. It's the attitude with which I am doing anything. I could be making soup and being of service to my family if my consciousness is such. I could be taking on the biggest position in the fellowship, and if I am stuck in my head, or my food isn't clean, or I'm not connected to my higher power, is it service? So, what I know today is that the most important thing for me to practice is that I continue, and people that know me know that I say this a lot, I believe that there is a divine gas station. And the divine gas station is a higher power. And that I need to gas up. And I can chug along for a while on my own steam, even perhaps a little bit of willpower and even a little bit of insurance that I've taken out by meetings and past meditations and past, whatever. But that if I am not presently plugging in, then I'm going to run out of gas. I'm going to start to feel different. I'm going to start to think differently. And pretty soon I'm going to need to do something to medicate that. And the something that I reach for, there's more than one, but there's the something that I'm here to share with you, is that that would be for me sugar and flour. And certainly then in between meals, and certainly then I feel like killing myself. Has nothing to do with weight. I didn't have a lot of weight killers when I came here, about 20 pounds. I had a pregnancy, so I gained 35 healthy pounds during that pregnancy, lost my pregnancy weight. Not about the weight. I could take one bite today and not gain a pound and feel very dark and be in a very dangerous, dangerous place. This is a deadly disease. So the big book does teach me that if I want immunity, if I want to ensure that I can stay abstinent, then I need to be willing. And I love what it says here. For this I am responsible. What does responsible mean to me today? I learned that it means the ability to respond. I cannot do that if I'm using. I've had to let go of other things along the way. I'm sure there will be more revealed. That I can never be far from God. God is breathing me. For me, my belief and understanding that I am being breathed. I'm being kept alive. I can't, there's nothing I can do to disconnect myself from God. But I can be unaware of the presence. I can be unaware. And the way that I can do that is by self-destructing, by living in my thinking. You know, I was feeling very anxious on the panel initially. And I asked myself, what am I believing? And what I got was I was believing that I somehow was supposed to say something to you. I'm not supposed to say something to you. I was asked to be here. I'm here. The end. I am talking. I'm noticing that. I'm hoping that there's something that I'm sharing that will connect your heart to mine and me to you. Vice versa. But that's all. You appear to be listening. You appear to be the audience. But what's really happening here? Why is it when we walk into the rooms that something happens? Is it because we learn that we don't crosstalk? There's the opportunity to actually hear and connect? I think that's part of it for me. Is it, fellowship feels very different to me. I don't participate much in coffees and all of that because for me, there's something that happens in a meeting that's very sacred. It's just my perception. What's read is precious to me. What is shared by you is precious to me. My opportunity to share is precious to me. I once heard there's two reasons to go to a meeting, and this is a meeting, and that is to feel the presence of God and to share experience, strength, and hope with another. I don't know if that's the two reasons to go to a meeting, but I liked it. The meeting rises to a different level of consciousness for me when I know that when I walk through those doors and the time arrives for the meeting to begin, that something shifts. That I'm looking out and I have to imagine that you're here because you're a compulsive overeater or you think you might be, or you're supporting somebody that is. That's an incredible gift. You know, because this is a disease for me, you know, where there's a lot of shame attached to it. Because not so much about the size of my body, but about my thinking, about the friendships that I let fall away, about the marriage I stayed in too long. So, back to the opportunity to be of service. In my life today, my daughter moved back in. My mother passed away September 11th of this year, and my daughter moved back in the same day. She'd been talking about it, but it was a set of circumstances. It was really like one door closed and another opened, and it was a huge gift to me because my daughter is the love of my life. And for those of you that have been here a long time, you lived through 4 years of infertility and all kinds of things and the miracle that she really is in my life. And I have the opportunity now, because she's 21 years old, to... She's just amazing. You know, she's my greatest teacher because when my mouth wants to get into her business, she lets me know it. She has no problem. I couldn't do that with my mom. And I want to take a minute to share about business, you know, because I do believe there's my business, there's your business, and then there's God's business. I notice that when I am in your business, there's friction. I notice that when I'm in God's business, there's fear. And I notice that when I'm in my business, I'm busy. So God's business for me is, you know, will I get sick? When will I die? You know, what's the weather going to be like? Your business is your business. And then my business is really more and more simple. Am I plugging in to my divine gas station today? And what other day, what universe am I living in that I think there's any other moment but right now? So I'm very grateful for the opportunities because I'm so grateful for people like Sandy that have the talent to make beautiful signs and for all the ways that each one of us can give, that this fellowship is unique because of each one of our unique abilities and the way that we give. I can barely draw a circle. You would not want me making your signs. But I try to step up to do what I feel innately is something that I can give that comes from a genuine and authentic place. And I love to speak from my heart. I love to speak and I love to listen. So I want to thank you for the opportunity, you know, to just have 20 minutes to tap into a moment in time of appreciation and gratitude, to know that if I follow my intuition and that gut guidance today, that the chances are so strong I will go to bed tonight without having to do anything to hurt myself or you. And that if I do, there's a way to clean it up. And I don't have to have any shame or secrets. I don't ever have to suffer. It doesn't mean I won't have pain. So what I will just close with is really just the deepest appreciation to know that there are people I can talk to about my relationship with my Creator, and that